Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on
Warrior
6.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Joe Goldberg is back in the house.
I'm here, Al. We're spending a lot of time together.
I know. People are going to talk.
Yeah, yeah. I know. My wife's going, who are you talking to? Nobody.
Nobody. Well, you're right. Not far off there. Well,
we're talking to somebody today.
I was going to say, speaking of nobody.
No, I went the other way. See,
you're a good guy. You're the good guy. I'm the bad guy today. I'm the bad cop. You're the good cop. How's that?
I can do that.
Yeah.
I don't write cop stuff. He writes cop stuff.
This time we've got Mr. David Darling, and he's bringing his new book into the world. It's called Edge of Time. It's a time travel adventure novel. So, David, how are you doing?
Hi, Al. I'm doing great, Joe. Nice to talk to you both again, and things are doing pretty good up here.
What is going on, okay? How did you get into this sci-fi sort of theme from what you were doing? Like, what was the change for you?
Well, for those of you that don't know, my main, my bread and butter, so to speak, is the Noah Hunter series. It's a police thriller series, and during breaks, or sometimes you just need a break. And I like to read science fiction, fantasy. And as one of my breaks, I plugged away at a science fiction time travel novel. Lo and behold, after many sessions going back over the years, it finally got done. So a little side project that never intended to turn into a book turn into a book.
There's a lot of things that I wouldn't have the confidence to do it. Like, it's tough to step out of what you do. And I know there's still things involved in this with, you know, FBI special agent. You still got stuff going on. I don't know if I would step out of my comfort zone. Was there a particular reason? Do you have like a real thing for sci-fi?
That was science fiction fantasy was the genre that I grew up with. Since I turned 14, many, many years ago, I had never gotten rid of any of my novels. I still have them. I have thousands of books on the shelves, and they're a real pain when you're moving. There's quite a few of them. But, so I always, that's where my heart is. And that's where I turned around and as an escape from my police genre thriller series, that's where I escaped to. As a writer, it was more of a challenge for the simple fact that a science fiction novel, it doesn't translate the same as a police novel. So the pacing is different, the length, everything's different. In that part, I really enjoyed it as a challenge. And I'm pretty sure I pulled it off, but time will tell, along with the critics.
So besides your history and love of reading and your thousand books, I've seen pictures of you've posted, it's a lot of books. Who were your influences in the science fiction fantasy realm, which is an interesting genre?
Oh, for sure. I would say my Robert A. Heinlein was my one of my first influences. I started off with some of his space adventures and some of his novels, and for everything from Friday to Number of the Beast. And there's just so many in between.
I grok that. Stranger in a Strange Land.
Stranger in a Strange Land, for sure. That's all, one of my favorites. Although I did try reading it again a few years ago, and I found it didn't quite hold up to the test of time. It was fairly dated. I'll leave it at that. Along with,
yes.
Well, he's at the time, it was cutting edge. So
right.
Even from Piers Anthony to, I'm trying to look around here real quick to get some more examples. And
I was an Asimov guy. How about Isaac Asimov or Arthur C. Clarke or that gang?
Clarke, I've got quite a few of his. Asimov, touch and go. It just wasn't really holding my interest. However, really? The love of the genre was still there, and that's stayed with me even till where I am now. Like I've also in the back pocket there, I got a couple other fantasy novels not published or quite doing anything with at this moment, but it's just these little side projects over time, they just keep accumulating, and next thing you know, they're done. So you got to do something with them.
Well, what elements am I going to find in Edge of Time that I don't see in Tipping Point and Grave Choices and the rest of them?
Boy, did the research have to bang on for this one. So when I'm talking about a farmer from the 1700s, man, do I got to know about farming in the 1700s. One of the big decisions in the later 1700s was, do they grow corn, tobacco, or this new plant that's becoming popular, indigo, because the dye was being used for denim jeans. And that was all starting to become popular. They were expensive, but they were becoming popular. So you had to look these things up. I had to look up some of the, well, I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself here when I haven't quite describe the story,
go ahead.
But
I was about to say, maybe you should summarize the book or the plot behind it, and then it'll make more sense.
Yeah, okay. Well, the whole plot is about a meteor that falls on a farmer's field, and he's south of rural Boston, which is from the heart of Boston right now. It's about 13 miles south, and that was the fall farmland back then. So this meteor falls on this farmer's property. His name is Clement Wallace. Meteor has strange properties, and he ends up being able to travel through time. Cut scene to modern day, and there was a break-in at Fort Knox, and an artifact was stolen that Roosevelt had placed in Fort Knox upon its opening. So they call in the top FBI investigator at the time. His name is Brad Holman. And he starts this whole thing off by investigating the Fort Knox burglary. And from there, you'll find out that time travel is possible. And he ends up working with the farmer from the 1700s and in order to stop a black hole from destroying the planet. It's slightly different than a police thriller novel.
Yeah. You got black holes, you got time travel, you got 1700. I mean, what don't you have in there? Yeah, talking monkeys? Or do you have, maybe you have those?
Yeah, I tried to avoid the world plagues on this one. Nobody wants to read about that anymore. However, now I can officially say, yes, the research for this was quite elaborate. You can find plans of Fort Knox. You can find out what it was like in 1926 when Roosevelt was there. And he was the first and only president to visit Fort Knox, and the rest have declined. We're up to present day. When I'm talking about time travel, relativity, and creating a black hole using a particle accelerator, well, there's a lot of research going into this. So I spent weeks, and weeks just researching this. It's called the Triumph Building, and it's based out of Vancouver, British Columbia, and they have a particle accelerator there. Can you create a black hole in a particle accelerator? Yes, you can. However, they're basically the size of a millimeter, they evaporate. They disappear within, like a 0.2 of a second or something like that. But because now we're dealing with time travel and some mystical force that's not bound to the laws of the universe, things get out of hand and get out of hand quickly and bad. And that's the summation in a nutshell.
Were you trying to, in this book, do more than entertain? Are there themes in this thing that people say, ah, I see whatever themes you may have had?
Not as much.
No. Or is it just pure entertainment?
It's just pure entertainment. Now, you have your most of your stories, as you know, Joe, from the spy tradecraft is like man versus man or man versus machine, and you, or man versus a biological weapon or a virus. You know, you have all these different things. So I believe I've turned this into man versus time. Because time itself does not want to be changed. So, and this is some of the struggles that these two characters go through as they're trying to stop this black hole from destroying the planet.
So it's kind of a quest.
In a way, yeah. So they, you know, there's no, it's like Greatest American Hero. There's no superhero manual. There's no reason to, they could travel through time, but that doesn't mean they know everything.
There's no manual?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Where's that manual for time travel?
Yeah, there's no manual for time travel. So these guys are, they mess up, they make mistakes, and some of those mistakes are dire, and they try again. And that's part of the thing I really, I enjoy a nice time travel story. I think I've pretty much succeeded in doing something that's rather unique. I haven't read that, obviously I haven't read anything about this type of scenario or plot line yet. Or else I wouldn't have wrote it. So I really hope everybody enjoys it in that regard.
So your dialogue, how's the dialogue with, especially when you have someone from the 1917s and stuff like that? I guess that would have been a lot of your research too, right?
Yes. The archaic references are there. However, I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, but I'll go ahead and put this forth that the farmer from the 1700s, a couple of centuries, he decides to not do anything and wallow in his misery and mourn his missing wife, which he probably repeatedly tried to bring back to life, and nothing worked. However, so he's been around. He knows how to use the internet and computers and stuff like that because he's lived through those times. So this is him in the future working with our present day, an FBI agent from our present day. So that's sort of my workaround on that.
How many different time periods did you have to study, research? So I haven't read it.
I went through
yet.
I went through mainly the late 1700s. From there,
you were just a kid then, right?
Yes, yeah.
Easy pops.
Yeah.
I'll,
yeah. Who's the oldest one on the call? Maybe it's me. It's me.
Yeah, you. Sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No
oh,
one's
yeah.
older than Joe.
Yes, me and Moses went to high school together.
Yeah. Carrying those stone tablets around must have been hard on your back. But so I studied mainly the late 1700s, and I worked my way through because the various presidents of the United States were involved. This is before the first president of the United States, and when he's involved as well to a certain extent because he was the leader of the commanding army at the time before he accepted the presidency. So I worked my way through several different presidents, Hoover, Ford, and up to today. Although there's some legal implications about using today's president, like Joe Biden, in a book, you can be sued. So if he doesn't find it favorable. So, you know, I came up with Bauer. I came up with a nice hockey name there. And President. Yeah. The current president is President Bauer. So, and along with the director of the current FBI. So we're the good guys. And then near the end, maybe they're not. So I'll stick with my choices.
So, well, I asked you sort of what the difference was between the new book and the police procedurals. Someone's at the bookstore, of course, your books are in the bookstore, and they're reaching for Nelson DeMille, and right next to it is a Dave Darling. What does the reader find? What do they see? What is a Dave Darling book?
Well, regardless of the genre, I like to keep the pace moving. So a lot of science fiction fantasy novels will literally spend pages and pages describing the inn, the meals, the food, travel. I can't do that. It just blows my mind. So all the things that as a reader I skip on, I just, yeah, they're describing another tavern. Great. I just go right to the next dialogue. So I get the idea what they're doing, but I don't follow through with it. I don't write that stuff into my books. I call that stuff fluff, and I try and avoid it. So while this is a science fiction novel, It leans more towards thriller or action adventure. So the pacing is there. It's from the first three or four pages. I like to sink that hook in, just like a good fisherman, and reel in the reader. And I don't quite have the cliffhangers on each chapter end, like a thriller book would, because they want you to turn pages. But there's enough there to keep the reader engaged and wanting to know more. So as a science fiction book from 30 years ago, you just wouldn't see most of this stuff. It's sort of like a modern take on writing, you know, like Brandon Sanderson for fantasy. He will go on for a whole entire chapter, like 2,000 words describing a setting. He's all world building. I'm more about the plot, the action, keep the reader engaged.
Well, you've mentioned reader several times. How much do you think about your reader as you're writing? Are they standing over your shoulder, or are they kind of, let me get this draft done, and I'll see you later, reader, then I'll think about you?
I like to assume a certain level of education for my readers. So, like, if you're a 12-year-old and you're reading this novel, well, first, good for you. There's a couple F-bombs in there, so beware. But I'm going on an average adult knows this material. So when I'm studying particle accelerators in quantum mechanics, quantum physics, I'm not relating it like I'm reading, like Stephen Hawking's going to be reading this. So Neil deGrasse, like these guys aren't going to be reading this novel. So when I'm talking about a quantum bounce, it's a theory of time about a black hole. So when, you know, I'm not talking it on a university level, I'm talking it to the average person. And so that in that way, I believe everybody, no matter your education level, can relate to it.
Do you find that in this book, do you write the violence in the book or the sex in the book differently than you would on your normal thriller? Or do you stay away from that? Are you conscious of how you write those?
I try and keep it, well, as anything in any book I'm writing, whether it's a police thriller novel, a science fiction, or a fantasy novel, I'm trying to keep it relevant for the reader. So if it's not relevant, it's not relevant for the book, then I won't have it in there. Now, most science fiction, you know, War of the Worlds. Yeah. Millions of people are dying. So, you know, there's violence in these books. Is it the same as a thriller novel? Well, I do have a couple scenes in there because he is an FBI agent and, you know, he's getting a little ticked off and he can do things that we can't now because of the time travel aspect. So, I wrote this really great scene near the end and, I questioned to my editor and agent, well, do you think this scene should be there? Because this is clearly from more of a police thriller aspect or a thriller novel, a shoot 'em out scene. And he's like, no, you got to leave that in. I'm not exactly sure. And he goes, no, leave it in. So that's one of the rare times my editor wanted me to leave things in as opposed to using the red pen to take things out.
So on completion of this book and finishing the sci-fi time travel sort of thing, how do you think it's changed you and how will you know, for your next book? It's like, so when you go back to the thriller, if you're going back to that, how do you think it's going to be different?
Well, this book has seen many eyes over the years. And at one point I wasn't even sure if it was viable or not. I ended up working with a guy you might know, Ryan Steck. I worked with him with this on for months. Ryan has read it through many times and offered his corrections, ideas, concepts, steered me on the path. And then...
Doesn't he work at Dunkin' Donuts?
Yeah. Dunkin' Donuts spies, real spies.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we worked on it for a long time. And then I was pitching it to agents all over the place. And then after about 150 rejection letters saying, great story, great writing, it's just not for me, I decided to shelf it for a while because, man, you get a little ticked. So, and then, you know, during all this time, I'm still focusing on my police series. And I dusted it off again last fall. There's a problem with writing. Authors may find when I first wrote this book, I would have said I was about a level 2 or a level 3. There's no real grading mark here, but, and because, you know, I, while I had some experience writing books, I didn't have a lot. So I wrote six books after I shelved that, and my knowledge and ideas had changed. So then I took Edge of Time and opened it up again, and I read it, and I went, well, no, there's no wonder agents didn't want it. Even the first line was horrible. So I rewrote the novel, and then I shelved it again, and I wrote a couple more books, and then I opened it again, and I still didn't like it. So I rewrote Edge of Time 3 times. I didn't even bother trying for another agent. I already have an agent, but I didn't try for another publisher, and I'm just releasing it now. So it's been thoroughly vetted and changed.
You're on a quest. Yeah. Get the book out, just like your for characters. Sure.
What gave you such drive to keep coming back to it? What was it about this story that you wanted to make sure it got out there?
Well, first, I consider myself a storyteller. You kind of got to it after, you know, book 6. You got to realize that you're telling stories, and I enjoy it. So I'm telling the story that I want to hear, and that's all I can do. And if other people enjoy that kind of thing, and great, good for you. But when I open it up again, and there's glaring mistakes that I can now see, I go, well, let's just fix that. And next thing you know, the book that I've been working on for months is on hold. And then I'm opening this novel that's 3 years old by now. I reworked it again and again. And it sort of paid off, because I still don't know who did it, but somebody gave Tom Colgan at Berkeley Penguin Random House, gave him the first 4 chapters. So 4 weeks ago, Tom emailed me and he says, I like it. Can you send me the whole entire manuscript? I'm like, wow, this is right after I had decided to self-publish, and it was already coming out. I already had the cover work done and everything. And Tom and his team loved the book, liked the story, liked the writing, but they just wasn't going to be for them. I know, but that's good news for me. That just kind of validates my writing in a way that, because Tom's impartial, he's doing things for business. He's a great guy too. We've talked a few times. So, but it's the feel good moment where you're like, yeah, well, this book is good, and it's good enough to really hold his attention. Might not be the one for the best for his company that he's talking about. So I will take that as a win. And I told him I'm going to go ahead and self-publish this. And I go, thank you very much. And then I calmly slipped him a new story in my email there, and that I just finished and got back from the editor. So we'll see how that goes.
I heard he drove off the bridge yesterday.
Yeah. Too busy with Bentley and everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that would be the dream publisher for me. Why not? Have big goals, and we'll see where they go.
Driving off the bridge.
Well, what are your goals? Where are you going to be in 5 years? What's the future in your future book?
Well, in 5 years, I really, I'm retiring in about 2.5. And I'm looking forward to putting more time into writing, hopefully some horrible rounds of golf, some fishing. But in 5 years, my daughter will be 15. So I don't know if I'm going to be happy enough with my income. So I'm hopefully making a couple bucks, getting some books out there, and we'll see where that goes.
Well, I'm sure it's better than Dunkin' Donuts.
You and Dunkin' Donuts. Where is you as a writer in 5 years? What would you imagine in your future travel, what you'll be as a writer in 5 or 10 years or in the future?
I hope I'm going to keep writing books that are the stories that I want to hear. And I enjoy doing it. I'm finding if I have a crunch time and I have to get this book out, or I'm all frustrated with it, I'm not enjoying it. You can clearly see that by the dialogue, the choppy sentence. It's like the product itself. And I want to be able to do it. If I want to write a fantasy novel, I'd love to get into that. I got a fantasy series on the go. So we'll see where that goes. Edge of Time was supposed to be a single book, a standalone novel. However, it took me about 2 years before I could come up with a viable story that would enable it to turn into at least a two-book series there. I sat down, and for about 3-4 weeks, more research, and this time it's all on, you know, the Irish history and stuff, but I started the sequel, so I'm a third done the sequel to Edge of Time. In 5-10 years, I'd love to be able to have a solid relationship with a publisher that would not only allow me to write action thriller novels, but you know, if there's a way to sneak in some fantasy and science fiction, sign me up. So I like jumping around between those two genres, and I find it really benefits the other, because I can, while I'm still writing, I'm having a break. I'm having a break from thrillers, writing about a magic system. Yeah, or, you know, if I'm tired of swords and sorcery, I can switch back to, you know, an FBI agent or something, whatever is holding my attention.
Do you find yourself coming up with the story first, then the characters or the setting? Like, how does it develop for you? And I guess, obviously, now in the series that you have, like Noah Hunter series, you've already set your character, so they're first in a way. But typically, how do you do it?
Basically, it's a one or two paragraph idea, synopsis, like you would read on the back of a book. So I had, I was literally going through my new ideas folder. I have a whole folder, and inside there are Word documents, and there's got to be 30 or 40 different ideas in there for novels. And this one kept coming back to me all the time about, do you know the TV show Alone on the History Channel, I think it is, where the contestants go off to a remote area, they could bring 10 items, and the longest one out survives and wins.
Alone, naked?
It's, well, they're not quite naked. They're well, they might be afraid. So it's something that, it's like Survivor, but they go to like remote places. And I mean, there's absolutely nobody around. Except another contestant, and they're so far apart that they can't help each other. So, and they film their whole experience. So it's a survival type TV show. Well, I had an idea, but what if one of these contestants on the show turned around, and as he's filming his own adventures and he's surviving hunting, fishing, etc., in the rugged up northern Ontario, he comes across you know, some foreign soldiers training, getting ready for an operation. Then Tim Hendricks came out with his really brilliant novel called The Instructor, where as a search evasion rescue trainer comes across some bad guys while he's teaching him how to train. So I don't know who the full synopsis of his, but it was close enough to his idea that when I was talking to Tim, I bounced that idea off of him and said, oh man, it's so close to your idea that I don't even know if I want to touch that now. He was laughing. He goes, nah, the first few pages will be the same. After that, he goes, you're on your own. So I'm like, all right. So off I go. So I just started another novel with that in mind. So the ideas are there. I work from a little paragraph, maybe two paragraphs, and I have to envision the whole story in my head, and then off I go.
Are you a one at a time writer, or juggle multiple things at the same time?
I thought I could do multiple things at the same time. So at one point I had a course of action, the police thriller novel. I was working on a fantasy novel at the time. And then I was working on another project. And then I realized I'm getting I'm getting characters' names messed up. I'm getting, it was horrible. So all in all, I think I like to work on one at a time just to keep things straight in my head.
Yeah, it's tough walking and chewing gum for me, so I know.
Yeah, that's for you.
No, I'm agreeing with you. Plus, I think while it can be done, don't get me wrong. However, I believe the story that you're working on solely, without other distractions, will be better for it.
How important is the setting to you? The location, is it key? And do you make it into a character, or is it just kind of an accessory?
Well, everything all is also at the whim of the publisher. So a friend, Steve Yersani, he wrote his novel called The Perfect Shot. The publisher loved it. However, it was about a Canadian sniper and in Canada, and the publisher.
Well, that's a fantasy.
Yeah. Well, hey, the Canadian snipers still have the longest distance shot. My buddy was standing right beside the guy who did it in Afghanistan. So I've seen the video on his phone. But anyway, I don't even know if I'm allowed to talk about that. The publisher will turn around and say, yep, love the story. Let's change that character's name to whatever. And okay, based in Canada. No, that's not going to work for me. I want this based out of, you know, Los Angeles. Okay, And he's a U.S. sniper. He's not a Canadian sniper. Go. Well, hey, you want the job? You want your novel out? Yeah, sure. Okay, whatever. I'll do that. And that's the way it is. So I don't mind that. I'm not attached to the setting or the place as much as I am, the characters and whatnot. But if the publisher wants me to change it, then I will.
What kind of relationship do you have with your characters?
That's actually a good question. I like that. bugger. Okay, I had been talking to Kyle Mills for a bit, and he was describing how he did some of his setup for his novels. So he'll write a 26,000 word guideline for his novels. So, and he'll have it per chapter. This is what's going to happen here. This next chapter, this is what's going to happen here. These are the characters, and he'll go on and on. So he'll write half a novel or a third of a novel just to outline a novel. So I tried that. So with my second novel, Brave Choices, I did that. So I wrote 20,000 words out, and I had it all laid out. I had plot. I had chapter by chapter how things were going to go, how it was going to. And it was brilliant. I loved it. I spent months on it. And then week three of writing, I realized Noah Hunter, the character, the police officer, wouldn't do this because I had already established, I created him. I know how he thinks, hopefully, because I'm a guy. So anyway, in book one, he was all established and this is how he would have reacted to these situations. So in book two, when I started writing, all of a sudden, Noah wasn't doing what I had laid out all planned for the rest of the book because I listened to the character and it worked. So I ended up throwing out 20,000 words of outline and I went and I listened to the characters. Well, this is what this guy would have done. So I didn't change it about to make it easier for me.
So you tried to be an outlier and then he became a pantser. And
yeah, it just,
what's, it's all right. I'm a hybrid. I'm more of a pantser. I'm more a pantser than an outliner, but I kind of know. Do you know the ending? Do you know where you need to go at certain spots to make sure you get to where you need to be?
However, now to bring all that all back to Edge of Time, I got characters jumping around in time. And at one point, they meet each other and meet themselves again, right? Time travel. Sure, why not? I had 38 pages of the time stream in the plot line spread out over my living room floor and down the hall to make sure it worked. And you had to do that or else. So I don't know if that was pantsing or plotting or not, but I had to make it work. I'm glad I did because it turned out and everything was pretty good following that timeline. But I don't know if that's quite a plotter or not.
Well, it's your outline. It's your structure.
Well, yeah.
Time is your structure here, Miss.
Yes. Yeah, I guess I'd buy that. That'd be more structured. But then I can carry that whole novel. I know where it's all going to go in my head, but I can keep it in my head while I'm writing, going towards a goal, even if it's a third of the way through the book. That's my, that's my goal at 40,000 words. I want to have this, and this done. But I can't remember my wife's birthday. I could juggle all these facts, and I learned quantum mechanics just so to write this last novel, this book here. And, I have problems remembering what we did last weekend. So I don't know what that means, but it is what it is.
Priorities, baby. Priorities.
Apparently. Yeah.
Well, what makes a good book for you? Like, what do you like in a book when you read it?
What do I like in a good book? I like something that doesn't follow the tropes per se. A really good book that will capture my attention is it feels like I just went through a breakup or a horrible divorce at the end. My God, this is over. Like, there's nothing else left. Like, there's no hidden chapters. Like, I feel a sense of loss. And I wish I could really try and get that a reader to have that feeling when my book is done, when they're reading my book. I don't know if I'm successful or not at that. That'd be up to a reader to let me know. However, one of the things I really enjoy about that is just the sense of getting involved in it and wanting to turn those pages, I'm just going to stay up another 5 minutes just to find out what happens and how they get out of this, whatever this is.
When you put together the book, you don't have any sort of direction in a way. It just sort of comes along. Like, you get kind of your story, your idea, and you just kind of go with it. And that, is there ever a time when you kind of get halfway through a book or a manuscript and you're at a point where you, you lose interest and you just want to stop?
Yes. Boy, that happened a lot. My gosh. Yeah.
So what do you do? Like when that happens, like what do you do or what do you say for advice for someone else that's just starting to write, let's say, because that's going to happen, period. Do you just give it a rest and move forward and come back to it, or do you push yourself through, or do you just shelve it for good?
I could give you a current example. Last week, so I'm trying to get book four of the Noah Hunter series completed. It's called Hunter's Gambit. And an illicit arms shipment was confiscated in the small town, and it took off from there. And the bad guys are trying to get their stuff back. Okay, so I'm writing it, and I'm at 67,000 words. So I'm getting near the end. And then I realized pretty much that Noah Hunter isn't really, it left off being a police thriller novel and turned into an action adventure spy type thriller. And this guy is turning into some sort of super special operative who's taking on all the bad guys and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? And I go, some of this stuff's great, but I can't use it. So, you know, I deleted 40,000 words and brought it back to a critical turning point there. So I did that again. And so I took off from there again. Another 13,000 words in there, and that can't happen. So I deleted it. I wasn't listening to the story, and I wasn't listening to the characters. I knew what everything I wrote was really cool, but it might have been more of a Mitch Rapp kind of novel versus a police thriller procedural novel. So it comes down to you gotta listen to your characters, you got to listen to the story, you got to stay within those boundaries.
I was just going to say, where do you get all this from? Like, you write a lot of espionage, spy, thriller, and even, you know, with the science fiction twist, but it's still, you've got a lot of that, let's say, law enforcement theme inside of that. So where does that come from for you, where you feel comfortable enough to write it? Or are you going to tell us you were really part of the NSA or something like that, that we... You know, we don't
the
know.
Beard. The beard speaks.
Well, yeah. It's here now, Joe. He's looking pretty handsome. Anyway.
How could it not, dude?
Well,
I
was in the Army for 17 years. And I learned in the Army, there's a lesson and a course for just about everything, including, let's just say, I'm teaching everybody how to drive a Jeep. I taught hundreds of kids how to drive Jeeps. A lot of scary moments in there, and I earned every gray hair. But we have a procedure. So there's, you know, you do your first parade, you check your tire pressure, your oil, and then you go through and it's progressive. And then you get into tactics. Okay, well, when you're driving around a corner or a blind corner, this is how we're going to do it. You know, and you got you're like a four-man team in Jeeps, say. And that progresses off to tanks and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a procedure and a way to do everything. So knowing that, I translated that over to while writing my police novels. There's police. I've trained with police, the RCMP, the Durham Region Police, the Toronto Police Services, while I was in the Army as well. And I was a martial arts instructor, so I taught them as well. But so I looked up police procedural techniques. For example, like there's 26 steps for securing a crime scene. How do you secure a crime scene? Well, everything I was reading and researching was in Canada, but my novel takes place in Wyoming. So I went on, I found the Douglas Police Academy in Wyoming. I looked up, there's the course materials. It's crime scene, securing a crime scene. Great. I downloaded the PDF and I started reading it, and I took all my notes. I knew the important points to look for. Once I learned it, I learned it. And that's great. I can apply that knowledge to future novels. Same with ballistics. Same with all the way up to this latest novel, quantum physics, stuff like that. I could read it. I knew enough to, I'm not an expert at it, but I can work my way through parts of a particle accelerator now, and to know enough to get what I need out of my story, and then I can move on. So I've also had, like, you know, some experts I've relied on. I've had a friend is a retired police detective, a homicide detective. So I bounced some ideas off him. He's like, yeah, you're on the right track. Keep going. Or he said, a detective will never ask a trooper or a police officer to do this. He'll tell him to do this. You know, it's a direct order. You know, take that prisoner, book him, get him to the hospital, then meet me back here. So stuff like that. So I mainly researched and relied on friends.
What's your favorite type of theme to work with in this genre? So, you know, the type of espionage or spy sort of category, thriller, what theme do you like to work with?
I think one of my favorite themes is it's the average guy. He's your average Joe.
I've heard it before.
It had to come up once or twice. It's an unassuming guy who just ends up getting caught up in these situations, and he reacts accordingly. He doesn't react like the guy's been trained by the Green Berets. He doesn't react like he's a Navy SEAL. But he does things to get the job done, whatever it needs to be doing. It might only be, at that time, it might only be to save his skin. Perfect. This is how this average guy would react. And he gets caught up into a series of events. Does he back down or does he not back down? It's not his thing, but there's the right thing to do. And then he moves on in that manner. So I think that's my favorite concept. It's just the average guy just doing his thing, and he gets caught up into a series of events, and then the story takes it from there.
Well, and I suppose you write about the evil guy from your own personal experience.
Which evil guy?
Anybody bad.
Well, if you...
Just take it out of your...
The bad guys don't believe they're bad guys. That's just the... That's the crux of things, really. You got... How many different religions, how many different wars were started with religions because of religion? And not one of them thinks they're the bad guy. It's perspective. So while I'm writing, you know, for example, you know, one of my novels was about organized crime. They had judges and lawyers and the whole everybody in on the take, and then that was the bad guy, I guess. But for example, in this latest novel, Edge of Time, there was no real bad guy per se. It was them against events, them against time that did not want to be changed, and dealing with their own mix-ups.
So now, where do people find David Darling? You know, like website, social media, street corner, like what where do people...
Well, currently I'm on my desk, but when I'm not sitting here, you could find me at daviddarlingbooks.com, or you can search for me on Twitter, fairly conversant on Twitter, daviddarlingca on Twitter, and probably there might be a few links when you post this story.
Well, fantastic. We'll make sure people get it. We'll send them right to you. I give out addresses, phone numbers, and everything.
Perfect. Yeah. Come on over. My kitchen floor ain't going to clean itself. Outstanding.
I'm not touching that one. Well, it's been interesting. It's been a thrill, of course. We've had the crazy Canadian Mr. David Darling and his new book, of course, Edge of Time. So thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I guess this is my hat trick. This is my third... appearance on the show, and although my first time with Joe.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.